Good afternoon. Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today, and on days when we're live, we'd love to hear from you. It's 410-662-8780, toll free 866-661-9309, or email us at foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we have a few interesting things on tap.
Yeah, we have a kind of interesting chef's challenge. Well, we're hoping people will help us with a little bit.
In the third segment of the program, we have, a very interesting chef challenge in that we, instead of listing ingredients for one another, you know, because Cindy essentially writes a list of things she would like to cook and make dishes, and I write a list of things that I would like to cook and make dishes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair?
Not always, actually. But anyway,
and
yes.
And then we hand it to each other.
Right.
And then we get mildly annoyed that you're not making the dish the way that
I would have conceived of it. Okay, these are Tony's thoughts. Thoughts by Tony. Yes. Anyway, I usually do something that I think is interesting, or I either do it that I actually think that you will like the ingredients, or I do something that's different or something on topic for what we're talking about. And then we've done the things where we did scenarios, like you're out in the outback.
And you like the time you made me build the cooking apparatus over a pit that I dug in the ground?
Exactly. Yes. That one, yeah.
That was an interesting, specific scenario.
Well,
this one we have...
A box on the counter.
A box beginning with 40 ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call it a
bowl. You wrote 20,
I wrote
20.
Let's call it a bowl, right? And I said, you know, it's going to be like a bowl of punishment. You don't know what you're going to get. we're each going to pick, in the last segment, we're going to pick 10 things each.
Out of the choices.
Out of the choices.
The 40 choices.
And so we would like listeners, if you don't have a call with a question about a dinner party you're trying to organize or matching wine with something, a recipe to fix or...
Just any culinary or wine questions.
Whatever that might be, or if there's a travel tip to wine country that you're after, something. If you don't want to get into that, but you want to make it a little bit harder for us, you're very welcome to do that. You can call in 410-662-8780 and just tell the lovely young lady that is taking the calls initially what those ingredients would be, and she'll write them down, and she'll mysteriously put them on our bowl of punishment. Or you can email us at foremanwolf@wypr.org.
All right. So
but that way listeners can get involved in making us scratch our heads a little bit harder in the last segment of the program.
Sounds good.
But it's always fun. I think when it is hard, it is actually a little more fun.
Of course. It's a game. It's always fun.
Yeah. We get a little competitive and weird about it.
Yeah, we do. All right.
So at any rate, and last week's program was during the pledge drive, and it was great to hear the pledge drive was so successful.
Definitely. That's wonderful. Thank you to everyone.
So we don't have to talk about that this week. And since food and wine is the best escape from the presidential election that's going on in our country,
that's
we don't have to talk about that this week.
No, we are not going to talk about that.
So tell me the things, Sin, like what's your top five list of things you're looking forward to coming up
in
the next month or two?
I'm so excited. All right. In the next month or two?
In the next month or two that you're going to have a shot at cooking.
Okay. So I'm obviously most excited about asparagus, which we know won't be until the end of April. So
yeah, April 22nd to 27th, somewhere
in there. Well, and you asked me a direct question, but I'm going to go off topic a little bit in that.
It is like a presidential debate.
Yes. My solution is to work with white asparagus right now since... You know, that is, you know, good right now. And I just, you know, I think one of the things that's interesting about working with white asparagus is you really need to blanch it off in acidulated water. So I don't know if everyone knows that.
You talk about working with white asparagus, and the characteristics when you cook it are so different, too.
It's totally different. And I should start at the beginning in that when you even touch white asparagus, you have to be careful because they will break just looking at them practically. They're very brittle. So when you are working with white asparagus, and you should always peel asparagus and just, you know, barely peel it. You don't want to lose too many wonderful vitamins and color, particularly with the green asparagus. But with the white, you want to peel it very gently, handle it gingerly, and then cut off, you know, the end of the stem. And and you can go with a pretty long piece. It's pretty much the same texture from tip to bottom. And you want to prepare blanching water that is a little bit of lemon. Now, one of the things you want to consider, it almost is a contradiction in that white asparagus tends to be a little bit bitter. And of course, lemon has acid in it, so it sort of doesn't make sense, but it does work. So you want a little bit of fresh lemon juice squeezed into your boiling water, and then I do put in a touch of sugar. And I mean, you know, for, say, a gallon of water, you're talking about one lemon and probably a tablespoon or two tablespoons of sugar. So you're talking about very little of either one, and then a little bit of salt, because you always want salt with a vegetable. But and then blanch it, but just, again, just handle it really carefully. And you want to cook it until you're happy with how it's cooked. I like to cook mine al dente, which only takes probably about a minute and a half, and depending on the size of the white asparagus.
So it's warm, tender, but still pretty snappy.
Yeah. Yes. And then obviously go into ice water to shock to stop the cooking process. And now white asparagus makes a wonderful salad, or obviously as a hot vegetable. So now that you're blanched, all you really need to do is, I mean, what I would do is I would re-blanch it again on pickup, when you're making it for your family, sorry. and, you know, have a pot of water on the back of your stove and just drop it in the water for probably 30, 40 seconds just to make it nice and hot, and then toss it in butter and salt, maybe a little pepper, or you could toss it in a little bit of olive oil, or you could go into a neutral oil if you prefer. Certainly olive oil, a very pretty, fruity olive oil will beautifully stand up to white asparagus. And I really love walnut oil, if you can eat walnuts with asparagus as well, or any other kind of nut oil if you have something like that that you're interested in working with.
I tell you what I'm a sucker for with white asparagus, and make me think about it the entire time, is it's that brunch time of the week.
Right.
Having it served warm with a nice poached egg that can be runny on that.
Yes.
And make a vinaigrette that's not cold in advance, maybe a tiny bit warm, with really attractive mushrooms, something with real flavor, hedgehog mushrooms, something like that.
Definitely. White asparagus and mushrooms and good are olive beautiful.
Oil and salt. Mm-hmm. And a little more acid, a little bit of vinegar, maybe champagne vinegar or something. Mm-hmm. And whisk that, and then that goes over your white asparagus, and you have a perfect first course for brunch.
That's great. And the other thing that I really like with white asparagus is mustard. So whole grain mustard, and if you are going to make something, you know, refined like a beurre blanc sauce, you can whisk in your whole grain mustard into the beurre blanc at the end, maybe add a little bit of fresh chive or even a little bit of freshly chopped tarragon. All those things would be really pretty with the white asparagus. Yeah.
So we have one of the callers I was hoping to get after last week. We spent so much time talking about what's going on, what to plant, what happens in vineyards at that time of the year. One of the farmers that we often work with, George, hello, you're on the air.
Hey, George.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, how are you today?
Just getting hungry listening to all this food you guys are cooking.
We need you to grow some stuff. So, George, why don't you tell folks real quick about the farm that you have and some of the things that you grow.
Our farm is located in eastern Baltimore County, approximately about 15, 20 minutes from downtown Essex area. We have about, I guess it's 97 acres. Our farm has been in the family since 1912.
That's great.
And I'm a fourth generation farmer. And we grow a little bit of everything, you know. I mean, heirloom tomatoes are probably our go-to, and our sweet corn's pretty good. Lots of different kinds of peppers and greens. We've been messing around in the green business a lot lately, different kinds of baby greens and microgreens and things like that.
Yeah, you've always been very responsive, man. I think I probably worked with you on getting things for our places for, I mean, got to be 15, 17 years, something like that.
Yeah, it's been pretty long. And, you know, like, I try to send out a list for the chefs that we have, you know, and if they need anything they like to work with. I like to do different things, you know. Like, I always have like I'm, you know, full-time farming, but I always have a hobby that I like to try something different, or, you know, my little thing. It like takes the stress off of you a little bit to go try growing something different that's nobody else grown in this area, you know.
That's cool. So maybe would you do me a favor or do us and our listeners a favor and give people an idea of March, because March is the time when, like, every home gardener is pretty frustrated. They don't know what to do, and I have a pretty strong feeling you're in the middle of busy time for you.
Yeah, March is funny. We had 70, 80 degree weather here last week. So everybody wants to jump the gun, but we see some beets and things like that in the field, but most of our stuff right now is in the greenhouse still. There's nothing that we planted outside that did not winter over, like all of our kales and our, onions and leeks and carrots and turnips, they'll winter over. Even some cabbage will winter over. But as far as planting something in the field right now or out in the garden right now, I'd be a little leery of it. I mean, you may win, you may lose. It all depends on the weather right now. And we can still have a serious snowstorm yet,
So when will you start? When do you think is a safe time?
Most of the time we start planting our greens around the 10th of April, like our broccoli or cabbage or, things that we transplant out of the greenhouse out into the field around the 10th of April. And our tomatoes will go in usually around the 1st of May, depending on the weather. You look at the 10-day forecast, and if you see it's going to go down to 34 degrees, you wait off a couple of days. But if you got your 10-day forecast the 1st of May and it's to the 10th of May, after the 10th of May, you're pretty safe,
What do you do to prepare your soil for planting, or what are your preparations prior to planting?
Oh, every year we do soil tests, and then we find out, on our farm we have good ground and we have poor ground, some of our ground's not really great for growing tomatoes, but some of our ground is phenomenal for growing them. So when we pull our soil test, we send it to where we get our fertilizer from up in Pennsylvania, and they will recommend, the micronutrients and the nutrients and stuff like that you need, and then they'll come up with like a custom blend of your fertilizer. We've been using a lot of mushroom soil lately, aged mushroom soil, and working that into the ground to build up the organic matter. But just taking soil tests and making sure the ground is ready to work when it's ready to work. Don't work it when it's wet.
Okay, good. That's interesting. Do you start with seeds? In a hothouse, or do you go right into the ground with your seeds and start that way?
We do all of our tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, melon, squash, and even our first plant in the corn will be in the greenhouse, seeded in individual cells. Mm-hmm. Like yesterday, for instance, I planted mesclun mix, baby arugula, carrots, colored carrots, and rainbow beets in the field by seed. And it's early, it's a chance we took. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, we can always make another planting of them. It's not the end of the world.
Okay.
So you're a little bit for you, you're taking a shot at getting the jump on the market with a couple of things.
Nice to have first red beets in the market for you guys, isn't
it? Sure, absolutely. No complaints.
Absolutely. I mean, your creativity and your aggressiveness about trying to come up with stuff and your responsiveness is always really, really helpful.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you for what you do for us. We greatly appreciate it, and for everybody else.
Everybody that sees you and all of your products in the markets, it's great for them as well. So what is the...
It's hard work, but it's very rewarding when you hear things like that, or when you go to a nice restaurant and, I think I took my daughter to Julian's on her 16th birthday, and Julian came out and made it, there was a Ravens guy there, and he come over and talked to us, and, he talked to the Ravens guy, but he really spent a lot of time with us, and there's a, there's a guy there that's, pretty much a athlete, a superstar, whatever you want to call him, and, you get over there and you get some hands-on attention, and, he brings it out to my daughter's attention, how important things are, and it really makes you feel pretty good when you go to a nice place like that, and they appreciate what you do, too,
Julian's a talented guy, but you got to take two things into account. One, you grow beautiful things for him, and he is quite the artist. And two, he's an Eagles fan, not a Ravens fan. So.
Well, I have to remind him of that next time.
Yeah, tough times for him.
Oh,
makes it good to concentrate on the cooking.
Yes, you guys definitely have some talent, Chester.
Oh, my gosh, George. That. Well, thank you so much. We greatly appreciate your work.
So, George, I got 1 minute. Tell us a story of something that you tried to plant and made you crazy because it never came off. You can never quite get it done.
Parsnips.
Did you say parsnips?
Yes.
Oh, what was the problem, do you think?
Germination takes like 3 to 4 weeks just to germinate the seed.
Okay.
Getting them straight was, you know, the ones that did germinate were crooked. Weed control was, it was a nightmare. I try them every year, and every year I'll plant, you know, 30,000 seeds, and I probably get 50 pound of parsnip.
Oh my God.
That's okay.
So the next time if I happen to see you coming to one of the restaurants, I'll make sure we have a parsnip salad or a parsnip dish for you.
It's very difficult for me to grow here. It's not impossible, because I did have one, out of the 5 years I've grown it, I had one good year of parsnip, and that's what makes me keep wanting to do it again, you know.
Sure.
Celery root is another one. You know, celery root's tough, you know. I always get a crop, but it's hard to get a nice, beautiful crop. You know, it gets all those funky roots all over it. And
I think where you are might be a little bit damp for some crops, no?
Yeah, it probably is. You know, we're not working with the greatest ground in the world for vegetables. You know, we're heavy silt clay, which is good for tomatoes and corn and peppers, but it's terrible for root crops and things like that, you know. So,
okay.
But, you know. Well, I got to deal with what God gave me, so that's what we're going to work with.
There you go. Well, and it's also amazing. I congratulate you on being a fourth-generation farmer. That is fantastic to hear, and really greatly appreciate that.
That's pretty cool. We're the only farm in the whole zip code.
That's unfortunately, I think, maybe a picture of too much of America these days.
Yeah, it is, especially around this area, you know, the eastern side of the county here. You know, you go a couple miles up out of 83, you got some farms, but as far as the east side, it's pretty tough down here.
Well, George Zaratka, thank you very much for the call. It was great to have you on, and be talking to you soon.
Thank you, George.
No problem, guys.
Have a good day.
Thanks a lot. I will. We'll see you soon, okay?
Okay.
Bye, guys. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Thank you. So when we come back on Formidable Fun Food and Wine, we're live today, obviously, and taking your calls, 410-662-8780. We can talk about your garden. We can talk about your dinner party. We can talk about your wine questions. Or reach us toll-free,
866-661-9309.
They know that we like to talk, Cindy. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today on the program. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or toll-free 866-661-9309 or email us with questions or comments, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we had promised in the third segment of the program we have a little bit different twist on a chef's challenge coming up with a big bowl of ingredients.
Right.
On cards that we had filled out. We already have several
shook
listeners who've either called or emailed in
we've added those in, given
a couple of ingredients.
We don't know,
haven't seen yet. So if you want to punish us with particular ingredients,
our mystery basket.
Or give us really nice things to cook, that would also be fine. After white asparagus, we just started the things you're looking forward to. I asked for the five things, and we talked about one. What else are you excited about that's upcoming?
And what I was referring to, of course, was green asparagus that we won't get until the end of April. The other thing that I just love this time of the year.
So what do you do until white asparagus?
Yeah, this year that's been my way. I'm doing white asparagus right now in anticipation of green asparagus coming in and really enjoying working with it. They're just far less things, I mean, to do with white asparagus, because with green asparagus, you can make soup. I would not make asparagus, white asparagus soup. I think it would just have very strange texture and flavor. So with green asparagus, I mean, we utilize every bit of the asparagus except for the very, very ends. So the woodier part can be made into soup or some sort of puree that's strained and made into a mousse or something like that. You asked me what else. Morel mushrooms are what I just cannot wait. I look forward to that greatly. And maybe in a week or two, we'll start to see them, but they will be very, very expensive. They always are. And wild mushrooms are always very expensive when they first come onto the market.
We've actually had a stretched out season of some of the winter mushrooms we get from the West Coast oftentimes,
mm-hmm.
like the hedgehogs that I mentioned that we've been getting from our supplier in Oregon.
Well, and of course, things always go together because, you know, if you do make something with green asparagus, it comes in, morels are beautiful with green asparagus. So that's always nice that Mother Nature has taken care of that perfect sort of food pairing. But with morels, you can do so many things. I like morels with pan-roasted sea scallops. I think that's beautiful, or a great piece of fish, but yet they also hold up to a wonderful piece of beef or really pretty much I can't think of much of it. I mean, I wouldn't put calamari and morels together, but I can't think of very many things that, you know, meat-wise that I wouldn't put a morel mushroom with. And I think one of the things to just think about when you are working with morels is that because they do grow wild, they grow in forest floors, that they have a lot of things in them, whether they're little bugs or a lot of sand. They tend to grow in sandy soil or pine needles or whatever. You really have to be very careful cleaning them, and yet remembering that a mushroom is like a sponge, and that when you do use any sort of water, they're going to absorb it, and that will begin to ruin the mushroom.
Well, there's a good question. People, they think of mushrooms and they go wild mushrooms, and there's a difference between cultivated mushrooms that are not button mushrooms and gathered mushrooms. And you're talking about morels, or I mentioned hedgehogs, which are someone goes out in the woods and finds these mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
When someone shows up with those kinds of mushrooms, what do you have to do in order to make sure that, besides the fact that you're getting them from someone who's telling you these are a variety of mushrooms that are actually safe to consume.
Mm-hmm.
But season for hunting for these things, for some of these things, is coming up.
Right.
Locally. What do you have to do to make sure that they're ready to actually be cooked and consumed?
Yeah, I think you need to sort of sift through them. They need to be, I would get a sheet pan out. So something that you have this large, you know, really lay them out in one layer and visually look at them and sort of shake them, you know, a little bit even to just sort of allow things to dislodge from them.
Rocks and pine needles and ladybugs.
Yeah, exactly. And just kind of check them out visually. And then there's a process. You can either use a damp towel if you think they don't look that dirty, to, you know, just kind of rub them clean. But honestly, I end up immersing them in water. And man, you have to work fast. So I have the, you know, ability to have a very large sink. And that's what you want. You want a large body of water so that you can work really fast. And you get them in there and you just start, I start swishing them around. And I remember going to Paul Bocuse's restaurant. We were there in the spring one year. And I walked in and he had morels just sitting in water in his sink. I was shocked by that. So obviously he makes that work. He's one of the best chefs in the world. So, but I would encourage you to kind of work quickly and swish them through and drain them very, very well. You know, kind of go from this body of water to...
Well, you don't want to absorb too much water because
no.
It's just more time that you have to take to get that worked out.
Right. And so then go into a strainer, a big strainer, so they're draining very quickly. And then I tend to lay them on a sheet pan and just pop them in the oven for a few minutes, maybe 350 degrees, again, one layer, so that they can begin to work their moisture out. And then I saute them at high heat, relatively high heat. And I typically cook morels in butter because that's what I prefer. But you can certainly cook them in some other type of oil if you'd prefer.
How much fat is the right amount of fat for mushrooms?
Not much. Just enough to really coat the bottom of the pan. And as you see them begin to dry, you add a little bit more. It's a little bit hard to say. Obviously, you don't want them immersed in fat because what's going to happen is first the water's going to come out.
You don't want to pan fry them.
No, sir, no. And so you do want to season them from the beginning. So just light salt. And so as the water content begins, you're going to just see this pan, and it's going to, if it did absorb much water, you're going to see it come out, let it evaporate. And as it evaporates, add a little bit more fat to the pan and just keep going until they begin to slightly caramelize.
Sometimes, I think it's probably smart. I know my habit is usually to start mushrooms like that in a little bit of oil, because when they first start to steam out, if you've not been perfect in getting every little bit of forest business out of the mushrooms, they kind of steam out into the pan. And if that oil, the butter, the whatever that's in the pan, you're going to have the water and you're going to have this. Maybe 5 minutes after you start, you have an opportunity to kind of drain some of that stuff off. You can literally lift the mushrooms out with mm-hmm. with tongs and and then restart your pan, wiped out, and then go ahead and start it in butter. And just in case you miss things, because I have a feeling that people may not be quite as persnickety as you are about surgically extracting every potential grain of sand from
a
mushroom.
Really,
but it's
like
a big deal if you bite down
to have
on
beautiful
it.
Beautiful morels to eat, not sandy, dirty ones.
No, but you bite down on bite down on something that like feels like sand in your teeth.
That's
nice.
That's no fun. Exactly.
And that's one thing about
that's the burden of working with wild mushrooms. You know, it's they are dirty, so you have to figure out how to get them clean without, you know, just making them totally soggy. So yeah.
Or tearing them to pieces.
Yeah, that too. Well, and morels have an unusual structure in that there's a hole in the center of them. So there's all kinds of stuff that can be in there. It's just like a little place for things to go. So yeah, they're a bit of a challenge to work with, but once worked with, they're well worth the effort because they're one of the most beautiful things you can eat.
I think I'm always excited with the idea of stuffing morels, but I'm always a little bit nervous about.
Yeah, well, if you've cleaned them, you're good. And yeah, I agree. They're you know, a little, you know, force meat, a little chicken force meat inside would be delicious, or even a vegetable or cheese force meat inside would be quite tasty.
Here's the term that you and I will toss around, and chefs will toss around: force meat. Maybe not the most elegant sounding term, but very useful in a lot of situations.
Uh-huh.
Exactly, what do you mean by that?
Just meat that's been ground, either through a meat grinder or in a food processor, or maybe by hand, most unlikely by hand, but usually through a grinder.
And maybe mixed with?
Yeah, it's bound, so typically would be bound with possibly with an egg or some other form of fat, or the fat of the meat that you're working with. So, you know, you with a force meat, you always want a certain amount of cold fat in your grind, because fatless meat will not be very desirable and will not hold together. So you either add the egg or you add breadcrumb or both, or you make sure you add a nice amount of fat.
If you've ever made a meatball, you're on the road to making a force meat.
Exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, meatloaf is force meat, really. It's ground meat.
Yeah. All of these are...
It's just a
meatball and meatloaf and force meat. None of these things are really the most elegant of terms.
Let's see. So that was only two of my five.
That was two of your five.
So what else? Well, ramps are another thing that are... very popular in kitchens now. I mean, there was a time when no one talked about ramps unless you were in the middle of France.
You did not.
I hate ramps.
Like ramps,
okay,
yeah.
There are a few things that you keep pulling these things out of.
Hate
me,
is
but there
a strong
are a couple,
term.
I dislike ramps.
Okay,
and,
that's much nicer.
They're weird to work with, quite frankly. And I'm sure there are chefs in town going, "Oh gosh," but I'm not fond of ramps, but a lot of the people that work with us are. And
listeners can call us and give us their feelings about ramps
if they want to. Yes.
You've stoked them. The number to reach us is 410-662-8780. I would never do that.
Mm.
Or toll free 866-661-9309. Or reach us, formerwolf@wypr.org, via email.
I think one of the other things is spring lamb. We've had the opportunity to dine in France and have very, very young lamb, and the bones, let's say even on a rack, are about half the size of your pinky finger. And I mean, that's just an amazing thing to eat. So this is the time of year for that. So that's something that should be available now or soon. And
there's not but so many real spring lamb available in the area, in the U.S., it's not an easy product
to
come up with.
It's not easy, but we also do tend to think of lamb this time of the year, particularly with the holidays coming soon. It is a favorite, and that's why, because, again, things all go hand in hand. It's a major holiday, and Easter is something that people are typically used to eating lamb, and it's because of the spring lamb, but that's from the old days. So
that's a new deal with cooking it a little bit differently. We'll talk about that when we come back. on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy and I are live today and happy to take calls if you'd like, 410-662-8780. If you're a little shy and your questions, you want to send them email style, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And coming up in just a few moments, we have that Chef's Challenge we were talking about, where you're welcome to send a few more key ingredients.
It's fun.
To go into our bowl of possible ingredients for the Chef's Challenge here in a few minutes.
It's a mystery basket.
So I hope you're prepared.
I hope you are. You better be. Actually, mine had a theme, so now it's going to be all jumbled up, so there will be no theme.
It's all going to be jumbled up,
I know,
of course.
It's going to be fun. So we were talking about baby lamb, and you had said something about, you know, how to cook that properly.
That's two things. One, a quick homage to a chef in the southwest of France, named Guy de Tournier, who has a great restaurant in Paris, Le Carré de Fouillon. And at that restaurant, his signature dish for a long time, even through various interior changes and menu modernism changes and everything else.
I know what you're getting at.
His dish is usually the saddle of a very young baby lamb that has been roasted in clay with spring garlic and
roasted
salt.
Roasted in
that's
clay,
all.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. They literally season the lamb, form the clay like box around it, and put that in the oven. And as the clay bakes, and the lamb inside cooks slowly and finishes.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
And they crack it at your table side.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it's one of those that they've obviously timed it out.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Talk about hard cooking.
And one of the things I learned eating it the first time, that was really the first time I remember getting lamb that young.
Mm-hmm.
And they cooked it pretty much through. And I don't usually
I remember being surprised by that.
And I don't like meat cooked through
that
much. I tend to like things that have some of the blood still medium rare, maybe even rare. You have something you love these days, a culotte steak that, you know, that is amazing Wagyu beef that begs to be very rare.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember sitting and eating this and having a conversation with you about it and realizing that, you know, there's only so much. I mean, the percentage of fat is kind of high, but there's not been, the meat has not had a lot of development of flavor, you know, and the bones are small, as you'd mentioned. So it really takes a little bit of time. And literally, it kind of, I think it's probably in that clay, first steams and then roasts.
Definitely, right.
And it's in its own juice, and it had very good flavor. But that, I mean, it had to take a long time to get that done, and to get that done to that point. And I kind of, that's, you know,
well,
usually the smaller the lamb, it was
and
great
And that's
flavor,
the end result, is that it was
tender,
unbelievably good.
And necessarily very tender.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was tender, it was moist, it was full of flavor. It was an amazing thing to eat. And of course, it was amazing to know what their process was and to know how successful they were with it. But yeah, the shock was that it was like medium well, and yet it was so good.
Or maybe even more than that.
Done.
I mean,
We also had another course there that was lunch, and it was an egg. It was an encased egg with the asparagus. And speaking of asparagus and lamb, and I'll never forget having that. It was just like, you know, that the beauty of having this basically fried egg that came out, that was just this, you cracked it and there it went.
It's the first time you've seen what a lot of chefs have tried to do,
very
clever business
so
of frying.
Delicately, beautifully done.
Of frying an egg, you know, where it's crispy on the outside.
Oh, it was
from
so
being,
good.
From being in the deep fryer. And,
right. It was beautiful.
And still runny inside.
Yeah, so baby lamb is pretty amazing thing to...
But if you can get it, I mean, I guess that's probably my single biggest tip is keep
We have some local farmers that I bet you could get it from if you really wanted to. Yep.
Yeah, now's the time to try to organize it
exactly.
If you're trying to get it for Easter or later in the spring.
Definitely,
yeah.
Easter's what, in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah, get on that.
And I would keep the seasoning very simple, and it's and be patient with cooking it, and be very and realize that you're probably going to have to cook it a little bit more, especially if it's very small.
Just on low heat. Low heat.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, it's got to be a delicate process. Well, and with you know, I'm always sort of wishing for peas this time of the year too, which really are far off.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
that's June.
But it's just the idea of tiny little peas with that lamb sounds so good. And like pearl onions or cipollini onions or some light reduction, you know, a jus, basically a lamb jus, just make a light broth.
Now, the ramps that are not your favorite love
that
might
would be
function
good.
That way.
Yeah, ramps with that would be nice.
No question. I mean, that's you could easily do a nice spring potato cake or something, you know, and do that with ramps for your baby lamb. That might
That would be good.
Nice and actually seasonal dish.
Well, and certainly the morels would go. Shall we go to Rachel?
We have a call to go to. Rachel in Frederick has a question.
Hey, Rachel.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
So my daughter Amanda has ventured out into making macarons.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all of the ingredients that we think we have all of the ingredients.
Okay.
And we have the mold, and we've looked up several recipes, and there's some variations. We're not quite sure which one to go with, and we know they're very temperamental, and we want to make them really pretty.
Yeah, they are.
They call the feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
They are very temperamental.
Do you have any recommendations?
Well, I'm curious what you mean when you say you have a mold.
We bought a kit in a food shop that has, it's like a silicone or rubber mold type thing that you would pour the macaron batter into.
Ah, okay. All right, because we pipe ours out onto a parchment onto a sheet pan, so I've never heard of doing it in a mold, but
we have the paper and the parchment too. I mean, we went all out and got everything we could get.
Hey, they're hard to make. You may want to go with what you've got there. I would do an open tip in a pastry bag, and then the fun of that is learning the motion. And I don't, you know, it's one of those things that I would go on the internet and watch a video of someone making a macaroon, because I can't describe it to you, because it's a swift move. It's a pipe and turn. And honestly, that's part of the fun of making a macaroon. But again, I would not discourage you from using whatever you have. I think, are you using, what kind of flour do you have?
I actually went down and hunted for the ground almond.
Good, perfect. Meal. Okay, good. So it's really the flour part is the big deal, and you know, just it's humidity, and it's one of the more temperamental. I mean, you are really you've picked a challenge for yourself.
It is definitely the devil. Yeah. How even is your oven?
Yeah, I've watched my pastry chef when she first started making them for me. She was unsuccessful, and she's a very good pastry chef. She had a hard time with it probably the first two or three times she made them. So just that's all I can say is practice and keep at it until you get it, because it's not an easy thing. But
yeah,
it's a good call. Good call. Good luck to you, Rachel.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right, take care.
You guys have a good day.
Thank you.
You too. Are you
chef
ready
challenge?
For?
I think
you're ready for the
it. Right? Or we're running out of time.
The chef challenge, the bowl of punishment edition.
All right. Okay.
Would you like to choose?
Yes,
first?
I would. All right.
Choose your 10.
Okay.
Ingredients.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
They've all been professionally mixed up.
Real fresh celery versus
not real fresh celery. Okay. But for the fresh, small, really aromatic, beautiful celery that
we
get sometimes.
Okay. I love that celery. That's real fresh, Tony. Whole walnuts. Pomegranates. I love kimchi. Come on, Tony.
I knew.
Or is that, did you do that? Or is that, oh, that's from a guest.
That's definitely a listener.
Oh, cool. All right. I don't even know what kimchi is. Golden. I mean, I do, but I don't.
You clearly need to spend some time in.
Oh, yeah.
Korean restaurants.
That's awesome. I do. And I wish I would. Golden spicy brown mustard. That's fun. Microcress.
Golden's spicy brown mustard?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's definitely also a listener.
I've never heard of that. I mean, I've never worked with it. And microcress.
Oh, I thought this stuff was poison when I was a kid.
Microcress?
No.
No, golden spicy brown mustard. Fennel. Oh, I got one of mine. Lobster stock. eggs. How many is that? Wait a minute. I have to count.
Do you have protein?
Yeah, right? Yeah, what am I making here? So that's 1, 2. Okay, 3, 4. I should have counted these out. You better count yours out now or we're wasting time.
Okay.
All right. And lump crab. I'm taking that. So let's see. All right, lump crab, pomegranates, whole walnuts. Okay, those don't go together. Celery. Okay, celery and walnuts and mustard, kimchi. All right, you have to tell me what kimchi is, Tony. I don't know what it is.
It is fermented garlic business.
Ooh.
With a very
so
strong...
So you use it as a seasoning agent?
With a very... You do. It's like a garnish, or it's very strong.
Okay. All right. Oh, boy. Celery. I'm going to make soup with the... I love fresh celery that's super fine. So I'm going to saute the celery, and why not add that lobster stock to it? Because I'm going to garnish it with lump crab, and apparently I'm going to put some kimchi in there. So I'll saute the celery, add the lobster stock.
I think you might want that kimchi for the very end.
Okay.
I'm going to have to make sure you get to a good Korean restaurant.
Okay.
Especially in Baltimore.
All right, let's work on it. And actually, I'm going to add fennel to it. So fennel, celery, lobster stock, everything sautés, works together. And, wow. And this is tough.
Yeah, this is
There's
much
not a
harder.
Lot of ingredients here.
Why did we do this?
And so that gets pureed and strained. And I'm going to, there's got to be cream somewhere. So I'm adding cream to it. And then I'm going to garnish it
there's
with
no
that
crab. There's no way if it's your house there's not cream.
Right. So I'm going to garnish the soup with the crab so it has the flavor of the celery and the fennel. And I'm going to garnish it with a little bit of the micro cress as well, a little on top. I'm going to put just a tiny bit of spicy brown mustard next to the crab meat when I pour the soup over it, which will perfume it away in a way I'm unfamiliar with. And that day-old bread I'm going to make
perfume
croutons
with. Perfume in a way that haunts my childhood. Yeah.
The day-old bread I'm going to dice that into very small pieces and saute it in butter and garnish my soup with that as well. And then the only thing I'm left with are eggs and walnuts and kimchi. Huh. I'm going to scramble the eggs and finally chop the walnuts and sprinkle those. Sprinkle, I just said sprinkle.
Next day, eggs
garnish
with, eggs with
eggs.
A little bit of kimchi kind of get you over a bad night the night before.
Okay, and then
right
a
now.
Little kimchi with my eggs and my walnuts.
And you just
I did it.
Then you just crack the walnuts.
And I'm going to eat the pomegranates. Yeah, I'm going to eat the pomegranates while I'm making all this because I love pomegranates.
You got... You okay. got difficult,
that was
difficultly
strange...
randomized.
Oh, yeah. That was a strange... your turn,
All
Tony.
Right. So the first two that I pulled out were a capon and then four fresh young guinea fowl.
You have a protein.
And four fresh young guinea fowl. So I have a
That's
bird
a lot
I have
of
a
meat.
Bird
you
party.
You got all the meat that I needed.
And then the next one is next is fresh hay.
Hay?
Okay.
Is that yours
hay.
Or a guess?
That's mine, actually.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you got it.
Onion leek garlic is on one card. Prink Brandywine, tomato, so it somehow got lucky on the season. Sardines. So I've got multiple courses here. I did pretty well.
Okay, good.
Niçoise olives, capers, baby pak choy, and home-jarred butter beans from last summer. So
yum.
I am very tempted. I'm going to make a little salad with Brandywine, tomato, and those butter beans,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit of fresh garlic.
Mm-hmm.
And the niçoise, and I'm going to grill off those sardines and have them as a first course with those. The capon, I'm going to smoke in the
hay.
In the hay.
There you go.
Exactly right. I'm going to smoke that guy in the hay. And what I really like to do is make a forced meat with that smoked capon and more of the onion, leek, and garlic. Wish I had other things for
you,
it.
You said forced meat.
I did.
Oh, my goodness.
I wanted to use one of the fancy terms from today.
Okay.
What I really want to do is use a lot of that meat, use the bones to make a stock, use that meat, that smoked meat to make a forced meat, I'll say it again,
mm-hmm.
for the young guinea fowl, and roast those guinea fowl off. And what do I have left to play
well,
with the guinea
you
fowl?
You have the garlic, leek, and onion, right?
Yeah, I've been using it again and again. What I would like to do is, and I've got capers I should have used. I have the pak choy. What I should do is the leek and pak choy and onion. Like a saute or a quick roast to go with those
Would
birds.
Would you like some kimchi for that?
To go with those birds. I think that might be kind of strange, but the eggs and kimchi will take care of you
okay.
after a bad night.
All right.
And I think I'm in good shape.
You might want to say what a capon is.
You're going to have to say what a capon is.
I'm not going to say what a capon is. It's a special chicken.
Yeah.
And they're hard to find. So
it's very difficult to come up with now. That was a...
And
when I was cooking years ago...
They can be delicious. Yeah, they used to be around a lot more.
In Union League
in
Philly, that was a standard, like, very popular thing, was to have a whole roasted capon for two that we'd carve at the table for people.
I love that.
It was kind of a crazy thing.
Yep. I love tableside. Wish we could do that.
With
okay, chef's challenge.
With capons.
Complete.
So, the ingredients we did not touch.
Well, I have Chardonnay right here.
You have Chardonnay?
Mm-hmm.
Ingredients we did not touch. What would you have done with, if your cards had been venison salami?
Oh, yum.
You would have been all right.
I would have made a salad with
dandelion greens.
Ooh, I would have made a salad with those two things.
Bulgur wheat.
And that.
Spring garlic.
Not that.
See, to me, that's
well, I could
that's
make a
nice
vinaigrette
salad ingredients
spring.
Right there.
Yeah, I could make a vinaigrette with the spring garlic.
Or maybe you could have gotten some of the other ones. There's saffron and banana leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else?
Veal and pork stock reduction. Barrel-aged soy sauce. I would like to have had that for my sauté,
yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, that would have helped me out, too.
And a little bit of that would have helped your hangover eggs.
Yeah. I can use that soy sauce.
White asparagus.
Uh-huh. Look at that.
I can't believe you got Golden's mustard. I literally
That's awesome.
Would sit and cry and not eat my lunch when I was
That's
given
funny.
Something with
Yeah,
Golden.
I've never had it before.
Yeah. Mesclun greens. Fresh basil.
Well, that's just a whole lot of salad you have over there.
Yeah. Cardamom pods.
All right. Well, that, so far there's really nothing you can do with that. What else?
Crusty fresh baked ciabatta.
Ooh, yummy.
See? 6 Sorrento lemons.
You could put the cardamom pods in butter and make toast points with the ciabatta.
You easily could.
Yep.
Yeah, Parmigiano Reggiano.
Ooh, and then put some Parmigiano on
Arborio it. Arborio rice. See, the one theme
Ooh,
thing I gave
Arborio
you.
Arborio rice, yeah.
Because I know Sorrento lemons are coming.
Yeah, that would be
There'll
good.
Be some on the market. I will admit, I did put Arborio rice, Parmigiano
lemons.
Reggiano.
That would be.
And the Sorrento lemons together.
Quite nice.
Because
make a little risotto.
To make a fabulous.
That would be great. Gosh, with those lemons, that would be outstanding.
Yeah, use Alrighty. The juice, use the peels.
There we go.
Garnish with the fillets.
Thank you for your additions.
Oh, anyway, that's you got a tough version of the random.
It
there.
Was a little odd.
Hey,
we do what we have to do.
Well, if folks want to listen to podcasts of former programs, they can go to the WYPR website and look at the Former Wolf page and dial up this or any other broadcast from the past with various recipes and whatnot, including the live programs. If you want to reach us via email, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org for questions and comments about the program. And if you want to reach Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram @ChefWolf or on Twitter @ChefCindyWolf.
And thanks for listening to Foreman and Wolf on WYPR. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf, have a great Sunday.